Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I've been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And good morning, Mr. Dave Schwann.
Well, good morning once again, David.
It's the holiday season. Here we are.
It's the
Once
holiday
again.
Season. Da 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 dum ba da beep bum ba da 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 da.
That's fantastic.
I'm in the spirit.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, see, because we played a little Hard Rock Cocoa and Joe and Susie Snowflake for you there.
I had that on my mind the other day.
Yeah.
That Andy Williams holiday season.
Oh, I love
it.
You know,
song.
That's probably my favorite album, the Red Album that he did back in the 1960s.
Sure.
Yeah. And I remember kind of as a kid him doing the Christmas specials.
I remember that. My mom was a big Andy Williams fan.
Yeah, Andy Williams, so, Perry Como.
Bing, of course.
Yeah.
Bob Hope, which I guess we're going to talk about.
We are going to talk a little bit about that. Yeah absolutely. In our week of history here, there's a few things that I want to focus on this week. One is 1843, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens is published. And you think about 1843, 6,000 copies were sold back in 1843.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That is a great deal. And one of the things, in addition to just being such an eternally beautiful story,
yes,
you know, of Ebenezer Scrooge being transformed, is that Dickens was writing very much about what was going on in Great Britain in his time, where if you could not pay your debts, you went to prison.
Yeah. Crazy, I know. Yeah,
you know, Bob Cratchit was in a very, very
tough spot,
especially when Scrooge said, "We don't want you anymore." What's he going to do with all of those kids?
Yeah,
that he had, and so at the end, of course, comes around and he raises his salary and makes his son a partner and all of that. But Dickens was writing very much about his time and place.
It's a great book, but I mean, so many of us probably experienced it in the movies or watching the movies.
Oh, sure.
And there's so many versions.
I saw the movies well before I read the book.
All of them. And I think I saw most of them on Family Classics originally,
right?
But Alistair Sim, I think, is the one that I like the most.
That one
Reginald Owen is another one. But I also love Scrooge with Bill Murray. I kind of find that to be kind of a holiday tradition, too, you know?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And it's got the same elements in that story as well. There was also A Christmas Carol with Henry Winkler, I remember. It was called American Christmas Carol.
Yes,
that aired in the 1970s.
Yes,
remember that?
1882,
first string of Christmas lights were created by Thomas Edison. He was on a roll back then.
Everything was lit.
Including him, I think. 1988, Dutch painter Vincent van Gogh cut off his left ear with a razor and sent it to a prostitute for safekeeping. Have you ever done that?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm just asking.
Nothing that crazy. Nothing that crazy.
All right.
Although, you know, we have a couple, at least two or three original Vincent van Goghs right down the street from here in the Art Institute
of Chicago.
Oh, look at
that. Yeah, that's cool.
Yep.
That's cool. 1920, Bob Hope becomes an American citizen. You know, he was born in Great Britain.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was 1920, and I think about, you know, he would have been, I think, how old, can you see what Bob's year birthday was? I think it was.
Didn't he make it to 100?
112. He did make it, barely.
Yeah.
Barely, because we had an event at the Broadcast Museum honoring his birthday. He wasn't there.
Right.
What year was he born, Curtis? I'm sorry, hello.
May 29th, 1903.
1915. He died on July 27th, 2003.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Look at that.
So he was born in 1903. He becomes a citizen when?
1920.
So he's 17.
He's a teenager.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a teenager at that point. And for more than 50 years, he was the one-man morale machine, spent time away from his family, especially at the holidays, in his comfortable Hollywood life to visit the American troops. That's how we really all know him.
Oh, I can remember seeing, I guess they amounted to public service announcements, PSAs, about the USO and savings bonds. Bob Scheer in America Hope. And
oh,
he would get
that
on and plug savings bonds and show clips of his many, many visits. This was the Vietnam era, going over to Vietnam and doing USO shows.
But he was never home for Christmas.
No.
I mean, it was always about the troops. And I think they're lost on a generation, because if he died 15 years ago and he was probably last really relevant 25 years ago, like on television, the whole generation that doesn't know who this man is.
Right, right.
A huge man in radio, TV, and the movies. Here's a holiday version of his classic Thanks for the Memories.
Christmas brings such goodwill and elation. It's brotherhood's own celebration. How great it would be for our nation if that Yuletide cheer could last all year. So thanks for the memory. The joy of Christmas Day makes us blessed in every way. As we gather with our loved ones, it's a perfect time to pray that the spirit of Geneva brings a peace that's here to stay. And we thank them. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Merry Christmas.
Ladies and gentlemen. Christmas.
That
version.
Goes back.
Yeah,
and
doesn't it?
Did you hear the reference to Geneva?
Geneva, yeah.
You know what he's talking about?
Yeah.
The Geneva Conference.
But you know what's weird is that this was probably in the 80s or 90s when he sang this, but that's what his reference was still,
right,
of peacetime.
Because the lyrics were 40 years old.
Yeah, they probably were. Point. They probably were. 1946, Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, starring James Stewart, Donna Reed, premiered in New York. And here's a look back at my interview with Jimmy Stewart's daughter that I did a couple years ago, who leads the Jimmy Stewart Museum in Indiana, Pennsylvania, which is, of course, where
Jimmy's
from.
That's his hometown.
That's his hometown. On the legacy of the movie and her father. And here's the big news. When he came back, and it was his first film in 5 years, and you have to think about that today, is he was gone serving our country for 5 years. And the first movie he does out of the box is the third and final Frank Capra production of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, it's so fitting.
Right?
You know, it's like it was written in the script.
Yeah, right, of his life. No, you're totally right. And then we've got the Jimmy Stewart Museum, and your father knew about it. It was kind of developed when he was still around, but he was a humble man. I don't know if he was really on board. Ah, museum about me. Is anybody going to be really interested? Is that me, you know?
You're absolutely right. I mean, he did not like the idea of a museum dedicated to him. Because he was humble, and he didn't think that he deserved it, and it was sort of embarrassing for him. But the museum did such a good job in maintaining the spirit of Dad. And you know, Dad said, if you're going to have it, I want it to be in town, in this small, traditional, sort of classic building. And it is, and they've kept it like that. And I think it's an absolute little jewel of a place, and I think Dad would really love it. He would be very proud of that place.
What are some of the things walking through there? Because obviously you're a part of that. What can you see there from his career?
Oh, there's a room with his history, a wonderful collection of photographs and information about his growing up in Indiana, about his war record. There's, you know, things that he wore, costumes, and wonderful movie posters and movie memorabilia. We gave the museum a lot of his awards. And stuff that we had from his life. And there's this, I really love this this room. They did a room of our house we sold the house after Dad died, and it was bought by somebody who tore it down. But he got the door.
Oh. How cool is that? Just talking a little history on Jimmy Stewart, huh?
There's my next road trip to Indiana, Pennsylvania.
To see this museum, absolutely. The other conversation I have here is from 1966. The Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, aired for the first time on CBS. It's a holiday classic. And a while back, I spoke to Judith Morgan, who wrote the definitive biography on Dr. Seuss, about the history of this legendary program. How did the TV special come about?
Ted had served with the animator Chuck Jones in World War II in Hollywood, doing war films and other projects. And Chuck had gone from Looney Tunes and his animation career. He had just switched to MGM. And he thought that one of the Seuss books should be adapted for television. He didn't care which, but he really wanted to make that connection. So he called his buddy Ted and asked, and Ted said no interest, because he always believed that his books were pure in themselves, and that's what he wanted. He was not into commercialization at all. And fortunately for all of us, his wife Helen had a bit broader picture and talked to Chuck and said, come on down to La Jolla, visit in person. It would be nice to see you again. And in person, Chuck Jones talked Ted into giving it a try, working with a friend, seeing what could happen. The challenge was they were taking a book that takes 12 minutes to read and stretching it into a half hour on television. And they turned out to be an amazing team. They argued, but they both had this vision of sticking with the story. And Ted began to realize all the changes that had to be made for television, such as color,
right.
Because the book itself is black and white, with the Grinch having pink eyes, and that's...
He's black and white and gray, red, yeah.
In the 1950s, yeah.
Yeah, and you think about that story now, you know, and while I love all the Rankin and Bass holiday classics, the Rudolphs and the Frosties, and why I love all the Charlie Browns, the stories were always a little silly, and they'd go off topic, and, you know, Rudolph is now dealing with a dentist, and all this other stuff to stretch it into an hour. But this story always, to me, just seemed like a natural expansion of the story that Ted originally wrote.
And that was exactly what Chuck wanted. They managed to take that story and honor it, stay with it, but add music. And Ted had always wanted to write songs, so this was a natural way to do it. And Ted Geisel said it was the easiest book he'd ever written. He only was hung up on the ending because he didn't want to be preachy or religious. He wanted just to be open-hearted about it.
And there you have it. It's pretty cool, huh? I love these holiday classics. I mean, like, let me just ask you this one question. So if there is one movie or TV special that you have to watch every Christmas, like it wouldn't be Christmas without you doing it, what would it be?
It's A Christmas Carol.
Christmas
and
Carol.
Really, any of the versions. And please don't get me wrong, Dave. I love the Grinch and...
Oh, no, not at all. That's what I'm asking. No, everybody's got their favorite. Everyone's got something that means something to them.
The black and white Christmas Carol films, the ones that Dean is showing, you know,
sure.
with Alistair Sim, or the Reginald Owen one, which is somewhat earlier.
Yeah.
And It's a Wonderful Life. You may remember when it was on almost as much as A Christmas Story, kind of back to back.
When some
and then
rights
NBC
lapsed.
Bought the rights for it.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
It's a Wonderful Life also is a...
I'd say that one's marvelous. Critical to watch for me.
Sure.
For the kids, it's Elf, It's a Christmas Story, and Christmas Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say Curtis. Is that sound about
Elf
right?
Elf for me, and then
Elf.
Younger, too, when I was growing up, my mom had the Mickey Mouse Once Upon a Christmas. It was basically the Mickey Mouse version of
Christmas Carol.
Scrooge. Yeah, Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
All that stuff, too.
Yeah. See, those are all classics that you have to have a piece of every single year. My wife also loves Christmas in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
With Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah. That's a good one. Holiday Inn.
Holiday Inn's another great one. Yeah. White Christmas, of course.
I was out at my father's yesterday, and they have a movie night every week there where he's living now. And
yeah.
They're showing
all the classics.
Christmas in Connecticut, Holiday Inn.
Oh, that's cool.
And then A Christmas Story. And It's a Wonderful Life.
That's awesome.
So, there's a not-miss movie lineup there.
Absolutely.